The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Okay, there we go. It didn't hook up the first time. All right, it's hooked up now. Good. It's, what the hell day is it? Hold on. I know what day it is. I just forgot who's, oh, okay. Very good. This is going to be fun. Frank Joseph is up tonight first. I thought he was in second. I don't know why I didn't think that. Frank is going to talk about something very unusual. There was a gentleman named Phil Schneider, and very few people out there, unless they really are interested in this field of the arcane and the eclectic and the odd, the unusual, the quasi-paranormal, or was it paranormal at all? Is it real? Wouldn't really know the name Phil Schneider. But Frank Joseph does, and this I am looking forward to. I had an opportunity to get Phil on the program, but he unfortunately was, I think I'll speak for myself, I'm not speaking for Frank, he was murdered before I could get him on the program. And I think that was a great loss for all of us. There was some fantastic information that Phil Schneider had that is so fantastic, a lot of people just can't believe it. Understandably, I get it. But I tended to believe much, if not most of it. There are circumstances why, and maybe we'll touch upon some of those with Frank Joseph this hour. Hello, friend Frank. Welcome back.
Hello, Jeff. It's great speaking with you again. This is a very disturbing but fascinating subject, and I'm grateful to you for the chance to discuss it tonight.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to this. He's forgotten. History is, well, history, whatever. Contemporary history of the strangeness of this planet, especially government military strangeness, is gone. It's virtually been eradicated. Somebody I talked to today, okay, I know who it was, said that back 25 years ago when he was first starting to become aware that things weren't as they were being purported and presented to us, he would go to the library and make photocopies of very important documents, booklets, pamphlets, whatever, papers. And he says now he goes to look for those via any major search engine. They're not there. They're all gone. They have erased so much history now from us. It's not even funny. So, with that said, go to it. Looking forward to it.
Well, you're absolutely correct. There is undoubtedly a concerted effort to erase some of these source materials. Not some, quite a few source materials. And this is not a conspiracy theory. You can just go on to Amazon.com and try to get certain books, which were very popular at one time. Not only popular, were bestsellers, national bestsellers. And you cannot get these books anymore, even though you've got the title and everything typed in. And this is a definite progressive movement underway to keep this simple. Well, just go to on a YouTube, for example. When YouTube first came out, when it was first being operative, it had a lot of great material on there, some very damning things, and that is now almost entirely gone. All those things are gone. That video has been deleted. You'll now be reading in an error message. It's not appropriate for communal standards. Well, whose communal standards? Certainly has nothing to do with the truth. But this gentleman here that we're talking about, Phil Schneider, is somebody that I had never heard of either. And I try to keep abreast of these things until I began putting together my book, Military Encounters with Extraterrestrials, back in 2018.
This is rather recent. How interesting. And if you look under Frank's name and guests, you will see the cover of his new book, which is a must-read for those of you who have time to read. Frank, you know the kind of work he does. It's extraordinary. I first heard about Phil Schneider at least 25 years ago, probably closer to 30. So anyway, but please go ahead, because I want to know what you know.
Well, thank you very much. I hope our listeners find it interesting, the book, because that's really begins my story tonight. I had not heard about Phil Schneider. I think, just parenthetically, what a tragedy that he did not get on your program. Well, that was the whole idea about taking him out. As far as any doubt about his murder, there is none.
No.
This man was
assassinated.
No. He was tortured to death.
Correct.
He was tortured to death. And this is not my conclusion. Or yours necessarily, it's his widow's conclusion, Marie, and his daughter, Dorothy's conclusion. This man had no known enemies in the world whatsoever. The man was a geologist. He was a scientist. He was not involved in any criminal activity of any kind.
Mm-hmm.
He had no outstanding debts, nothing like that at all. But when he began to become a whistleblower, he'd gone from a geologist to a whistleblower. There were numerous attempts against his life. He said there were 11 attempts against his life over the course of less than 1 year.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, if you find that I am dead and they're going to call it a suicide, you know that I've been murdered. I mean, that's like almost a direct quote from this man. His closest friend, more than a friend, his colleague, his name was Ron Lee Rummel. They both, and he also had worked for the U.S. government. He'd been a colleague of Phil Schneider's going back to the early 1970s. He was murdered also, and also his murder was declared a suicide. So both of these men had to be gotten out of the way. And, you know, that's the story, really. That's the end of the story, or supposedly the end of the story. But it began back in 1978. In 1978, Phil Schneider was living as a geologist and a contractor in an area of New Mexico near a little town. He actually lived in a little town of Dulce. And not too much for work out there, but word came that the Air Force was building an underground base there. No big deal. Of course, they build underground bases around the world. Air Force...
Yeah.
Pardon me?
They call them DUMBs, D-U-M-B.
They call them DUMBs, that's right. And it's an acronym for, I forgot exactly what it means.
Deep Underground Military Base.
There you go. Thank you very much. You're more knowledgeable on this than I am. But what happens is that when the government or the military wants to create a base somewhere, a lot of times they'll hire local help. Not everybody is, they don't have a lot of carpenters necessarily or construction people in the
Absolutely.
Army.
Absolutely. So local they hire worksmen, local craftsmen, local plumbers, local electricians. Sure they
exactly.
do, but they have to
And it's great whenever that happens. It's great because they splash a lot of money around, and it's a great opportunity for these people that are so isolated they don't get this kind of a chance of. And Phil Schneider was one of these people.
He was a university. They have to sign an NDA that, whoa. They got real teeth in that one.
Not at first. His story, by the way, I sent over it to you. I don't know if you got it. If not, I'll send it to you. There are a number of YouTube still in which he, Phil Schneider, explains this early procedure. So I'm basing my presentation time primarily on these YouTubes because there's not too much in print, very little in print on this man. And I gathered some contemporaneous
there used to be more.
Things.
Frank, there used to be more on him. There was quite a bit, and including I read, I think it was his wife or maybe his daughter, I don't remember which one, went to view him after the autopsy. Somehow they really researched his death, and there's
no way
in hell. And the NDAs though now are really got teeth. Back you're right, you're totally right. Back in the day, different, totally different.
Now, just to underscore exactly what you were saying, the disappearance of the source material, his daughter, Dorothy, actually posted a photograph. I've seen it. It was on the Internet. She has some website. When I was researching my book back in 2017, a photograph, a hideous photograph of his autopsy.
Yep.
And this man looked like he had been struck by a train. He looks, I mean, it was ghastly. I had to try to tear the memory out of my mind. It was one of the worst images I've ever seen. And, you know, you think like, well, how could a daughter possibly show this of her father? But she did the courageous right thing. Obviously, this man did not die of suicide. It doesn't take a coroner to see that this man was executed. He was executed like mafia style. When, for example, even in the autopsy report, they bring out that he was found with a cord wrapped around his neck and a knot half tied in front. I don't see how that is even possible, judging what you could have seen.
He's
the photograph.
In a wheelchair.
That photograph has disappeared. You cannot find that photograph anymore.
He lived
I tried
much
just
of his
before
life.
To. Going on tonight. I wanted to get that photograph.
Yeah.
It's not
there.
It's not available. If it is, I could not find it.
Well, he was in a wheelchair, too. People don't remember that. He was debilitated anyway.
His wife Marie and his daughter for many years really tried to champion the memory of this man. There's no way this guy could be a suicide. And they came out and they said it had to be government authorities that this, because this man had no enemies, had none. Nobody was after him for a back debt or anything like that. He had no dealings with organized crime.
Right.
And just like his friend, Ron Lee Rummel, same thing. So anyway, back in 1978, I say here's just this local geologist. Had no interest in UFOs or anything like that at all. No so-called conspiracy theories, nothing like that entered into his thinking. And so he got a chance to help make this base. And they found that he also had expertise in controlled demolitions underground in order to create open spaces without doing any damage to any, say, aquifers or anything like that. So he was quite a good specialist, and he combined geology with this construction techniques that he was working on. So they hired him to do this base, and he had no special clearance at first. And so after the base was built, he found that it was kind of strange because it had military personnel from the Air Force, a few people from the U.S. Marines, but a lot of people from NATO. A lot of foreigners were there. He thought that was kind of strange. What kind of base is this? And the people there, the military personnel, liked Phil, and they were very honest and open with him. And they let him come in, and anytime things needed to be fixed or so forth, there he could go in, and they were telling him what's going on there. And they were just literally walking together down a hall one time, and they passed an alien. it's a gray alien just walking past. So Phil
just
sort
like
of freaks out. At, yeah, mm-hmm. And that's all. It was very casual. And so the military, the Air Force officer told him, well, it's no big deal. He says, it seems freaky to you, you know. We'd appreciate it if you don't discuss it yet because we're in the process of negotiation with these people. And, well, sure, they're from other worlds. Well, we deal people here like in NATO. They're people from other countries as well. It's no big deal. And we're going to get a lot of their really great technology. They're going to share alien technology with us, and we're going to have some kind of a deal with them. We don't know about whatever that is, you know. So eventually, Phil had to create, told that if you want to come back here and do some more work, and we do need you to work, and the money was really good, they said, well, we have to have a non-disclosure agreement or something like that, saying that you cannot discuss anything like this ever. So oh, he signed right away, big deal, you know, it's fine. So, make a long story short, he was just a recognizable face around there, and over the course of time, in about a year, he got to see or learn about 11 different races from not of this place, 11 different races. Some of these races were very gentle, he said, and fine and nice, and others were not. Others were the exact extreme.
Right.
Most of them were... Go ahead, yeah.
Well, what's the venue for this now? Just we lost it somewhere in the fascinating disclosures you're making. Where was this taking place?
This is taking place outside of a little town called Dulce.
Dulce?
In New Mexico.
New Mexico. Got it.
Yeah.
Okay.
And, you know, if I can make just any claim to originality, maybe, maybe not, maybe I can't make this claim. In my book, there's at least one thing, and I found I don't see anybody else has mentioned this. Dulce, where this underground base is and where these aliens are walking around just like Joe Blow, is literally walking distance from the Skinwalker Ranch. That's kind of interesting. You can take a short hike, and you will be from Dulce to the Skinwalker Ranch. And
is
we can't
it way,
go into that.
Oh,
I
didn't know that. It's that close?
Yep. It's that close. You can walk there. That's that close.
I had
It'd
no
take you
idea.
About maybe... Take you about 90 minutes if you're not in a hurry.
Yeah,
a couple hours.
I get it.
You can walk.
Oh,
there.
I thought it was in a different state entirely.
No, no. It's walking distance. And what's interesting about that is that, for those of our listeners who are aware of Skinwalker, that is one of the best documented places of high weirdness on the earth. And
yes, it is.
Sort of reflects, I guess, somewhat on Dulce. So he's in Dulce. He's at this underground base. And as time goes on, he's able to see many things, and there's nobody stopping him from looking at anything. And eventually, he was surprised that something had changed when the Air Force, an Air Force officer, a guy whose name he never has disclosed, but a very close friend of his, who told him just about everything that he knew there, he said, here, take this. And they gave him a .45 caliber revolver, a pistol. And they said, you might need this, and there are some areas you cannot go in and take this in, but we'll tell you that you can't go in there.
Uh-huh.
So he said, geez, I don't know anything about shooting. And I said, well, you know, we just have to have this. Well, one of the things that they did there, and all this sounds so extremely insane that I totally rejected it when I first heard about it. I thought, this is just such far-out stuff, but I learned more and more things, and I found out that this man was no liar, and he paid with this information with his life, and I also found confirming evidence of another underground base just before this in which something very similar happened from a completely different source he never knew about. One of the things they used to do at this underground base just outside Dulce was the aliens would give lectures. Now, they didn't speak. Everything was telepathic or as a combination of telepathy and visual signs. So high communication through mental telepathy and also very primitive ways of pointing and showing things. They would give lectures. And the agreement had been between the United States and NATO with the aliens is that they would share their technology with us as much as they wanted to share with us, and we would let, this is just it's a horrible thing to even contemplate, but they thought that And this was an agreement that had been made back as far as 1954. The agreement was that the United States government would allow certain heads of cattle, certain cattle to be abducted, and human beings as well. It's unbelievable that so-called civilized human beings could agree to such a thing, but the American military would virtually salivate when the aliens would demonstrate the type of technology that they had. We have to have this. We have to have this. And that's what the aliens would do. They would show certain demonstrations of the metals and so forth they had. And eventually they did give the Americans one thing. They only gave one thing away. They gave away a technology that made the stealth bomber possible. They gave away, which is related to additional technology that made our submarines invisible to this, at that time, the Soviets.
Well, you know, a lot of that tech was the prop at the back of the sub. They made them so they didn't vibrate and didn't make noise. They had a special design for the propeller that pushed the submarine. Anyway, that was a big deal, which somehow the Chinese managed to steal from us.
I don't think the Chinese stole so much. We just gave it away.
Sold it to them, one or the other.
Thanks, Clinton, you know. Just hand it over. And I don't think the Chinese are too busier about spying. Why should they when we have saps like that high up in government? So anyway, that's what the aliens gave away, and that's all they gave away. That's it. The rest they gave away were just promises, hollow promises. And every time they'd show, look, we can do this and that, the generals and the technologists that were involved in the military, they would just go bonkers. God, we got to have that. We'll do anything to get that. Apparently, they did do anything to get that. And the only rule, or one of the few rules that the aliens had, is that when the aliens are in a situation where they're lecturing, or they're in a group, that none of the human beings were to be armed. No sidearms, nothing. And so the Americans abided by that. That's right. And they had guards checking people for guns and so forth. And you couldn't bring any weapons in. Well, on a day in 1979, I think it was May 15th. I may have the wrong date here. May 15th, that's the one that I'm thinking, 1979, a Marine general walked into, not a general, I'm sorry, Lieutenant Colonel, I don't know why I said general, a Marine Lieutenant Colonel walked into a lecture room where one of the aliens was making a presentation, telepathically and also with gestures, and he had forgotten, he had left his sidearm on. And apparently the guards didn't notice, or they were overawed by this guy with all his medals or something. Who knows what it was. He strayed in. The alien saw they had a sidearm on him, and the alien killed him immediately. What happened then was...
Do we know how the death was administered?
It was some kind of a high-intensity beam that just...
emanated from
him
one,
internally.
One being
it was like
to the
like putting him inside a microwave oven or something like that.
Okay. Right.
So what happened then is that all chaos happened. Alarms went off. Phil Schneider was there at the time, although he was nowhere near where this incident had taken place. But all of a sudden, all these alarms are going off. Lights are flashing. Doors are locking. And his friend, I'm thinking a general, a high-ranking officer in the Air Force who was very honest with him, ran in to Phil and said, come with us. There's an altercation going on with the aliens. And like I said, there were a variety of aliens at that time. Most of them were the grays that were these little guys, and there were other grays that were very tall. They were over 7 feet tall. They looked just like the rest of the grays, only they were very tall. And then there were these other horrible-looking things that smelled very badly that nobody could want to have anything to do
with. That's interesting. Let me say something about that. I have not heard of grays that tall.
I never have either.
Three to 4 feet-ish, and then the second group, the tall grays, are
over 7 feet tall.
Five to six. But when you get up over 7, that's way up there. But whatever,
yeah.
I'm sure they're
Phil
there.
Said that it was difficult to tell if all of these so-called 11 different races were actually races or some kind of automatons or cyborgs or something. Nobody was sure. Nobody was sure about that. There was a lot of discussion, like, is that really a living thing or is that creature a synthetically made thing? Well, anyway, this altercation is going off. Phil is scared to death. He's never fired a gun in his life. And here he's got this .45 caliber, which is a pretty big firearm, sidearm.
Yes, it is.
And everybody else is running around with everything else. And they go into a fairly large room, a conference room, and they get into an absolute firefight. And the end of the firefight was 65 or 66 Americans and NATO personnel were killed. All of the aliens were killed. Even those aliens that were wounded, the Americans went over and finished them off. It was really vicious. It was like a race riot. I mean, there was no quarter given. There was no surrender. And Phil survived. He got a bad hip into his shoulder. It tore like his shoulder off. He was hospitalized for years afterwards.
Well, that's why he was in a wheelchair part of the time.
It blew two of his fingers off. And his other two friends were unscathed. His best friend there, and when he gives this lecture, and you can see this, when he is talking about this, and he talks about his friend, the high-ranking U.S. Air Force officer who was killed, and he says, this man gave his life for me, and he's right on the verge of tears. You can really see that. I cannot believe that a guy could have faked that. I just don't see that. He is talking about a real memory, and when he's talking about that, he says, this man, my friend, he really died for me. He saved me from this. But Phil got tore up anyway. The other two guys, the Americans that survived, they were unscathed. They just were lucky. Phil was tore up pretty bad. Like I said, he was hospitalized literally for years, came down with cancer. The cancer eventually slowly went away, but nonetheless, he had pretty bad cancer for a while. At the end of his life, he was cancer-free, as far as I understand. Maybe I'm wrong in that.
I think you're right. It wasn't killing him, at least at that point.
No, he was treated for cancer and eventually got over it. But like I say, I didn't know that he was in a wheelchair, but I'm not at all surprised to hear that. Because that's what
happened.
That's
my understanding of it. That's my memory. I may be wrong.
So anyway,
they
either closed the place down or fumigated it or took it out or whatever. And the Americans and then people in NATO said, well, that's the end of any treaty with these horrible creatures. And they were never serious about giving us anything anyway. And Phil says that from that time on, from 1979 on, we have been in a quasi war with these beings. And these beings are still trying to make, he said, in his lifetime, some kind of deals with people in the government. And there are people in government that still want to make deals with them, even though what they did.
Just for our listeners who may be kind of mind-boggled by this, who started the fight?
He didn't know, except that, well, the fight started. He had heard when this lieutenant colonel from the Marines walked into the room where the alien was giving a lecture to a few dozen people from NATO and the Air Force, and the rule had been you never walk in with your weapons while this guy is lecturing. I don't know why they had that. And the lieutenant colonel walked in with his sidearm. Either he neglected to do it or just defiantly came in with it.
He broke a code
of behavior. And when the alien saw that he had his sidearm on, the alien killed him instantly.
Right.
In front of everybody.
Right.
No explanations, nothing. Now, when all this was over and Phil got out of the hospital, Phil left as a changed man. And he was there with his only friend left from all this was the guy at the beginning was Ron Lee Rummel. And they both left the Air Force and left their contracts behind. They even left their paychecks behind. Because the authorities kept saying, oh, come on back and get your paychecks. And they just felt that was weird, like they're trying to lure them back or something. They said, well, send me the paychecks. Oh, no, you got to come in and pick them up. And so they left their paychecks. They wouldn't go anywhere near any government installation after that. They had heard that the installation had been, like, fumigated and abandoned, but he didn't know because he was completely cut out. He and his friend Ron Lee were out of that, no more with them. But they both decided there's no way that we can live with this for the rest of our lives. And if people think we're totally nuts, that's fine. We don't care if anybody believes us at all. We just can't keep this bottle up. It's going to drive us insane. I mean, this is nuts. This is now the year, be 1995. And during that time, when they just started, no, I'm sorry, it's a little before 1994, I think, they published a few self-published stuff. Nobody would publish, I think, anything as crazy as this. They put out some magazine articles, had some interviews, nothing big. And Ron Lee, his friend, is murdered. They never found out who murdered him. Another guy that, I guess he was also a geologist. I'm not sure if that's the case. But he was one of the workers there at the Dulce underground base. Ron Lee was killed. And they said, oh, it's just a suicide. And when that happened, and then Phil said, they're going to do the same thing to me. So I might as well use my time as best as I can. And he went around on a lecture circuit. And within 7 months of that going on the lecture circuit, there had been 11 attempts on his life. He had no idea who these people were. Either these were serious attempts, or most of the attempts were made to frighten him so he wouldn't really do it, blowing up his car and shooting at him and things like that, shooting at his wife and daughter and that sort of thing. And but he persisted, and he made his most successful presentation, meaning in terms of people that came out to hear him, in late 1995, less in November 1995, and that's the one that's videotaped. It may be his last presentation.
That's about and the time I was trying to get him on the program.
Less than 2 months later, he was dead.
Yep.
And at the time, they just said, oh, it was just a suicide, and that was the end of it. And then his, like I said, his daughter published photographs of him. It's autopsy photographs. And there's no way that somebody could look like that after no. kind of suicide that they said.
Yeah, it was grotesque.
It was really gross. Like I said, this photograph is unobtainable so far as I have been able to find out. But if others can find it, then I hope they can find it and take a look at it.
If you find it, and some of you probably have it on a drive somewhere, you can send it to me and I'll send it right to Frank. So no problem.
Yeah, I don't want to see it again. I mean, I've seen it once.
If you need it, let me know. Let's put it that way.
Right. Yeah, if I can't imagine that, you know. But when I first learned of this story, I thought it was something that was incomprehensible. Now, one of the things, and actually there are several things in his presentation, especially Phil's last presentation that was made less than 2 months before his death, and the presentation was made in November 1995, he says some things that are very prescient and that are disturbing. He said, for example, he says the agenda of the aliens is pretty obvious. He says they want this world for minerals. They go around to planets all around the galaxy. They take whatever they want. And there's other things. Because these different races or species, whatever you want to call them, there are 9 of them. Did I say 11? I'm sorry. He mentioned that there were 9 different alien
I think
races
he said 9.
Species. Oh, I did say 9. Okay, that's what he said, yeah. They're 7-foot tall, gray, and they're sort of like humanoid. They're crossed between humanoid and the grays. And they are very nasty. And they're among the worst of them all. What they want from human beings is they want to eat them. They don't want to eat them in the sense like they're eating bones or anything like that. They like the glandular secretions of animals and humans, mammals and humans. The reason why, he says, is they get high on the adrenal gland. It's some kind of like a high, it's almost like cocaine. And that
you know what you're talking about. You're talking about adrenochrome in little children sacrificed to the satanic elitists. That's what they do. They scare them. They die
perfectly.
Their adrenals dump into their blood, and there are other things in the blood as well, but it's quite a charge. That's why if you ever sit down to a rare red steak and feel macho a half an hour to an hour later, it's because of all the adrenaline that is in the blood, that's in the meat, because the animal knows it's about to be slaughtered. So its adrenal glands dump.
That's right. And that segues just perfectly with what else he said, that the military, when he was there, estimated that upwards of 100,000 children disappear every year. Now, I don't know if those are 100,000 American children or North American or worldwide. He never specified that. But he said that those 100,000 children that are disappearing are... I find it very difficult to discuss these things, really. But they are, they're eaten. They're used for their adrenal glands by these 7-foot-tall monsters.
This is not a joke. Now, and let's go back, though, and before people lose track of the initial stages of your presentation, there are a lot of visitors out of this group of 9 or 11. I think it was 9.
It's nine.
Yeah, there are many more than that out there. Some of them are very nice. They're fine. They vary like people vary. There's some monsters among them. So don't write them all off. That's the ticket.
Yeah,
here.
But write most of them off according to Phil.
According to Phil. Yeah.
Yeah. He said they range from these horrible monsters that like to feast on the adrenal of animals, mammals and humans, to these, some of the grays. Now, not all of the grays are the same. There's some kind of a division, he said, going on, that they don't like what's going on and they want to have good relations with peoples that have achieved some level of civilization like ourselves. And I think that fits into a show that you and I did earlier this year, where was a crop circle that appeared in England, which actually showed how to combat the coronavirus. And that may have been done by these people of goodwill, or these ETs of goodwill. But that's not most of them. Most of them, he said that they are liars, that they will say anything. And the reason why they're liars, too, is they have no respect for us whatsoever. There are certain things they want and they need. And that's how most of them are. Now, some of them that are beneficial, they're in a real small minority, he said, very small. He said in his presentation, and this I found really interesting, he said that one of the goals, the chief goals on the agenda of the extraterrestrials, is to radically reduce the human population. He says by 5/6 to 7/8. And that their goal for achieving this, now remember, he made this presentation, he made this statement in 1995, in November 1995. He says that the alien agenda of reducing the human world population by 5/6 to 7/8 is in the year 2029. I find that kind of interesting.
I remember when that was said, though. When was it said, approximately?
Early November 1995.
So they could easily be off 6 or 7. The agendas change.
Well, it looks like the agenda is right on schedule. This is only 2021.
That's right, but it could accelerate quickly.
The world population now is 7.9 billion, and they want that reduced between 5/6 to 7/8, he said.
That's right.
Now, that segues with another thing. And that's an interesting thing. When you pick up a story like this that has at least some foundation and credibility and basic logic,
let me pop one thing in here real quick.
Go ahead. Yes.
The initial thrust to depopulate the planet has to do with white, Western, Christian, first world nations. Understand that. We are targeted first. We're being flooded with third and fourth world people here now who will never assimilate, don't care, can't read, can't write, couldn't care less, full of disease, you name it. They're being put in this country, 100 million of them. That's the target. So when we have the first world pretty well hobbled, with the exception of advanced, or we'll say Brazil, we'll throw that in there, China, India, they have portions that are first world, all right? But they have the full gamut of the full spectrum of humanity is evidenced in their societies. They're not strictly first world nations. So they'll be the second or third tier in the world depopulation process. Not the first. We're the first. They want us out of here, most of us. That's the game.
Yes, they do. And the reason they want us out of here first is because we are the ones that are building the space program. And that is what really alarms them. This segues into my book, which I concluded in 2018. And in that book, I said that if human beings are able to jump, as they did technologically, from the Wright brothers to the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles with atomic weapons within 100 years, which is nothing, how far are we going to jump technologically in the future by bringing atomic weapons into outer space? Then we will be a real threat. We will be regarded as a real challenge to any other civilization out there. If we want to stay on our own planet and massacre each other with atomic bombs or anything else, they could not care less. But when we bring this kind of technology into space, and this is exactly what Dr. Friedman said, he says that we are going to be in a position of being quarantined because our track record as a viral race, as a species, does not bode well for the galactic neighborhood, as he would say. So right. It would appear that these aliens want to be able, first of all, to eliminate humanity as a threat by wiping out or at least sufficiently reducing the population of that specific people that is creating the high technology necessary for interplanetary travel. And that fits in with another strangely related thing, and that's something called the Georgia Guidestones. Now, I know we're coming up on the end of this hour, but I'll just mention them in passing.
Good
and
solid
how they relate
10 minutes.
To this, I think.
We have okay. A good solid 10 minutes, and the picture is up there under Frank's name and guess. You'll see, you must look at the Georgia Guidestones picture. Please do, in case you haven't seen it. Fascinating. Go ahead.
It's a shame that so many people are not aware that they even exist. People like yourself, of course, are very familiar with it, and so this information I'm getting out will be old to listeners like ourselves. The Georgia Guidestones are a granite monument erected in 1980. Now, that's interesting because the Georgia Guidestones, in other words, were being made and built and designed in the same year that this firefight took place in the underground base at Dulce. So it was made at the same time as that event. It was erected in 1980 in a place called Elbert County. That's in northeast Georgia. There's nothing around there. A set of 10 guidelines is inscribed on the structure in 8 modern languages, and a shorter message is inscribed at the top of the structure in 4 ancient languages. It's a very bizarre structure. The monument stands about 90 miles east of Atlanta. One slab stands in the center, and 4 arranged around it. A capstone lies on top of the 5 slabs. An additional stone tablet, which is set in the ground a short distance to the west of the structure, provides some notes on the history and purpose of the Guidestones. They're not to be believed. That's just somebody's propaganda. The monument itself is 19 feet, 3 inches tall. It's made from 6 granite slabs weighing 237,700 pounds apiece. It's on a 5-acre site. When the monument was finally dedicated on March 22nd, 1980, It was unveiled before an audience of between 100 and 400 people, whoever they were. No one to this day has found out who commissioned this thing, which was extremely expensive, as what you might imagine. It was made by a local construction company, Georgia Construction Company. No one knows who, any names or associations made with it. Not only that, but the tablet that's associated with it on the ground has bad punctuation and misspellings. You would think that something is, that they've gone to so much trouble, they would have had proper grammar, but it's not. Punctuation is often misspelled words.
Do you think it has to do with the fact that they had almost, I guess, 10 languages there, and maybe the person doing the, I don't know, the translations got screwed up? I don't know.
It seems as though, I would say, a foreigner made this. I do not believe that an American made this. Who that foreigner was, I don't know. It's a message consisting of a set of 10 guidelines or principles is engraved on the Georgia Guidestones in English, Spanish, Swahili, Hindi, Hebrew, naturally, Arabic, traditional Chinese, and Russian. Then there's other sections of it that are written in Babylonian. Who the heck is going to read Babylonian today? Classical Greek, Sanskrit, yeah, and ancient Egyptian. I mean, let me
suggest something else. It's almost like it was done or executed by people maybe not from here, because they got things so out of sync. Babylonian and contemporary languages, why bother? I don't get it.
You know, that's a really good point. I never stopped to think of, maybe the aliens made this thing. Very possible. Yeah, they can't tell the difference between a Babylonian and a Russian. But it's interesting what is on this thing in English. I'll read it real fast, and then I can go over some of the highlights of the thing. It says, this is what it's telling us to do. Maintain humanity under 500 million in perpetual balance with nature. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Unite humanity with a living new language. Rule passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Balance personal rights with social duties. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. Be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Leave room for nature, unquote. That sounds really nice on the surface, but there are, when you look deeper below the surface, some really disturbing things. It says that the very first line is, maintain humanity under 500 million. Out of a world population of 7.9 billion, how are we to do that? How is that to be done? Unless it's through some very radical means. It's not a matter of just preaching birth control. The other thing it's mentioned is the key word of Marxists, every word, diversity. Guide reproduction wisely, improving diversity. Well, we've heard that term associated with white genocide from the beginning. Then the next line is, unite humanity with a living new language. That's another old communist ploy that they began back in the 1900s, where they had Esperanto and all these other things that were supposed to be part of the world government. And then it goes on to say, it talks about how important it is to have a world court. Well, how would you like to stand accused of something in a world court? All this is about the so-called New World Order. It's horrible, and only somebody like Yoko Ono could have found it a wonderful thing. She's quoted, Yoko Ono is saying that it's, quote, a stirring call to rational thinking. Well, she's a extreme Bolshevik herself, so naturally she'd find it great. So it sounds really bad. But I think that the thing about maintain humanity under 500 million, that is a clue. And then here's Phil is telling us about how by the year 2029, our population is going to be reduced by 7/8. So,
all true. That's what they're
saying. So I think these are pieces of a puzzle which unfortunately are beginning to fit. And I don't know what the answer could possibly be.
I wish I had been able to get Phil on the program just to get his perspective.
You would have asked such great questions. I mean, every interview I've had with you, you bring up things I never consider. And that's why I love being on the show. That's why I am on it all the time, because we have these discussions. And I come away, I think, better informed than you do listening to these things. It's really great. I never thought about the Georgia Guidestones as possibly, and now, credibly, being written and composed and set up by, naturally, the ETs. There it is. That's their agenda. That's it. Reduce the world population to a fraction of what it is by whatever means necessary, creating a world language and a world court. Well, that sounds like a lot of fun, doesn't it? Sounds like an absolute totalitarian world situation. It's terrible.
Wow. 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 That's all I can say. It's just just to get the idea of the Georgia Guidestones, excuse me, put up there in 1980 by somebody who didn't get the spelling and grammar and syntax correct suggests somebody else did it. I don't necessarily have to go off planet, but it suggests that it, maybe a foreigner did it, like you said. That's very
interesting. It doesn't sound like an American would have done this.
No, I agree.
No. You don't do spell check on a stone monument?
No. I got some other news here. Hold on one second. I did some checking, and thanks to James Kirkland. Thank you, James. The actual distance from the Skinwalker Ranch to Dulce is 462 miles. Takes 8 hours and 9 minutes to drive it.
Well, I was wrong.
You weren't wrong. You were just misinformed. That's different.
Well, no, I don't blame anybody but myself. I made a mistake.
I just wanted to, I really strive for accuracy just like you do, always.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you brought it up. I will not make that mistake again.
No, it's 462 miles.
That's far distance.
It's up in Utah, the Skinwalker Ranch, not New
Mexico. That's my mistake.
No problem. Listen, what we heard tonight from Frank was something you will not hear on any other program. Nobody talks about Phil Schneider, and I would urge you to look him up. How many are there YouTube videos of Phil? There was one that I saw.
No, there are several.
Good.
It's unfortunate. Okay. I cannot find his whole speech, his whole lecture. It's chopped up kind of in parts. I will send more. I'll send you everything that I have.
Oh, I'll put it up. Thank you.
Uh-huh.
No. I will.
I'll send you all that I have, and hopefully people can sort of get a... Because I based tonight's presentation mostly on these YouTubes. What else is there?
Well, Phil is... I don't think I'm going too far by saying I know I'm not. He is an unsung and virtually unknown American hero. He really did, at the end, stick his neck out there, and he paid the price.
And he knew it was coming.
Sure he did.
He told people. Yep. He says, if I'm killed, if I die, and they say it's a suicide, you know that I've been murdered.
One of the things that he talked about was the enormity of some of these underground dumb bases.
Mm-hmm. Two miles down, he said.
And at least that wide. I mean, they were huge. They are huge. They're big.
Yeah.
So, what we don't see on the surface, don't be fooled. There's plenty down below. All right. Wonderful program. Thank you, Frank. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you. And it's always a great experience for me, and I hope our listeners can come to some positive conclusions about this.
Oh, they do. Very good. Very good indeed. All right, you take care. We'll talk to you next month.
Look forward to it. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay, good night. Okay, Frank. Good night. All right, we'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen, with hour number two. Hold on.